Keywords, Volume 1, by Chan Master Sheng Yan. Thinking Without Purpose, from Chan Newsletter, Number 35, January, 1984. To think means to investigate, to look into something, to analyze with reasoning and logic. First, we should understand that thinking by itself does not necessarily cause vexations. For example, statues of bodhisattvas and Buddhas and certain patriarchs, especially those in the Tibetan tradition, often have their heads tilted to one side, signifying thinking. But there is a difference between thinking with purpose and thinking without purpose. People ordinarily think with a self-benefiting purpose in mind. When there is a purpose, there is a goal, and when there is a goal, there is a self that wants to accomplish that goal. Bodhisattvas, on the other hand, engage in thinking, but without a specific purpose. People who are not self-centered will have no self-benefit in mind when they act. The thinking of a bodhisattva arises out of unified mind, which we call samadhi. To have a sense of self implies that there is a conscious entity, the self, that is separate from the object of one's thinking. In that state, at least two thought streams exist, the self and what that the self is thinking about. With two thought streams, one's mind cannot be completely unified, and one cannot enter samadhi. A bodhisattva without a self-center can abide in samadhi and still act without mental constructs. Does this kind of thinking still function as regular thought? By all means, but the thinking of a bodhisattva is more open, clear, and suffused with wisdom. It is not necessary for Buddhas and bodhisattvas to think. They do think, however, when they speak the Dharma and when they help others. Mahayana Buddhism holds that Buddhahood has triune aspects. Dharmakaya, the Dharma or truth body, Nirmanakaya, the incarnation body, and the Sambhogakaya, the bliss body. Thinking is not necessary for a Buddha in the Dharmakaya aspect, but an incarnated Buddha does engage in thinking. What kind of thinking? An incarnated Buddha who appears before human beings would of course use human thinking. The difference is that incarnated Buddhas and Bodhisattvas do not have specific ends associated with their actions, and they do not have a sense of self when performing them. Ordinary sentient beings, despite what they may say or believe, always have a sense of self. While most of us are not at the stage where we can function without a sense of purpose, it is still beneficial that we understand that it is possible. This understanding is especially important in daily life, when we are prey to a sense of gain and loss, when self and environment come into conflict. At such times, it is important to remind ourselves of asamskrita, the unconditioned state in which we can act without self-centered purpose. We will not always be able to do this, but we should still emulate the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. When conflicts arise between self and others, or self and environment, we can reflect that we are caught up in our sense of self and our sense of purpose. If we can move towards asamskrita, then these conflicts may be resolved. Samskrita, the conditioned state, involves a self. When there is a self, whatever we encounter will be in the realm of the six kinds of sense data, of which the sources are our own bodies and the environment. Since the six kinds of sense data are based on phenomena, can thoughts be separate from phenomena? Even when we think in abstract concepts, we still have to use symbols, which are to the mind, also phenomena. That is to say, without reference to phenomena, we cannot think. If we were to say that we must have phenomena in order to think, and that the spirit realm can only be reached through thought, we will arrive at materialism, the belief that phenomena are real. But the Buddhist scriptures do not lead us towards a materialistic point of view. The Sutra of Complete Enlightenment shows that thinking arises only when our mind interacts with the six kinds of sense data. We can turn this around and say that without the functioning of the mind, there would be no sense data. For example, if you are in a sound, dreamless sleep, what exists in the world? It can be said that nothing exists. By the same token, when the mind is completely dull, as in a coma, nothing exists because the mind is unaware of anything. On the other hand, when the mind is completely clear and most acute, once again, it is unaware of the material world. Thus, in these two opposing states, when the mind is extremely clear or extremely dull, there will be no awareness of the material world. The existence of ordinary sense data, ordinary material things, is present only when the mind is in its ordinary state. This line of reasoning leads to the view that phenomena exist only when the mind is aware of them. When the mind lacks such awareness, phenomena cannot be said to exist. So this is the opposite of materialism. Are we to say that the Sutra of Complete Enlightenment leads us to pure idealism? The mind can function only when it is interacting with phenomena, including purely mental phenomena. If we posit that phenomena exist only when they are experienced by the mind, then neither phenomena nor mind really exists. If phenomena had independent existence, they would not have to rely on the mind's awareness of them. And if the mind had real independent existence, its functioning would not rely on the material world. Thus, we can reject both materialism and idealism. If we know that the mind is an illusion without real substance, to use an illusory mind to seek Buddhahood would result in more illusions, like seeing flowers in the sky. We might go a step further and see the flowers blossom and bear fruit. The fruit that comes from illusory flowers cannot have more substance than the flowers themselves. Therefore, it is futile to try to probe the depth of Buddhahood with the self-centered, illusory mind. Sentient beings may aspire to Buddhahood, but approach it with self-centered attitudes, an impossible task. It is not easy to let go of these attitudes. To get results, a practitioner can summon extraordinary effort for a while, but this is very difficult to persist in over a long time. Most people are not willing to endure untold suffering to reach a goal. The result is that they may realize that practice is not so easy. Ridding oneself of vexations is not easy, let alone becoming a Buddha. In fact, some people develop more vexations after they begin to practice. At some point, they may feel, "I'll stop for a while. When I am ready, I will come back again." I have met a number of people who put forth a great deal of effort at first, but slacken after a while, and ultimately turn from the path. It is best not to seek anything from practice. The more we seek spiritual attainment, the more we live in illusion, and the further we drift from seeing Buddha nature. Instead, we should maintain a calm and stable attitude and just follow the teachings of the Buddha, not concerning ourselves with progress or getting rid of vexations. Free of such concerns, vexations will lessen of their own accord, and we will make progress while being unaware of making progress. If we are anxious about progress, disappointment is likely, and we may become disillusioned and eventually turn away from practice. When we are free from thinking with purpose and have let go of self-centered mind, then complete enlightenment and Buddhahood are possible.